Good morning, everybody. It is Thursday morning, March 17th. It is 11:13 a.m. We are doing Chem 12A. Let's see, this is the last meeting before spring break. Next week is spring break, so we won't have any classes next week. I will be out of touch for most of spring break. I am headed out on a trip. I'm leaving actually pretty quick here after we finish office hours this afternoon. I am headed out to the British Virgin Islands. I'm going to be out in the middle of the Caribbean on a boat with no cell phone access and no email. So I'll have a reminder on my email if you guys happen to email me that you'll get an auto reply saying that I'm out of town. And if it's urgent and I see it, I may try to reply. There is no guarantee. I don't even know how much cell reception I'm going to have. So actually, I do know how much cell reception I'm going to have. It's next to nothing because I've been out there before. So the likelihood is you will not hear from me until I get back. I actually get back in town on the Monday when we come back into classes, and I will be going straight from the airport to Cabrillo in order to teach. So it'll be an interesting Monday morning, that Monday. But anyway, let's jump in. Let me start a screen share. And we'll jump into stereochemistry here. We'll pick up where we left off. So we were looking, at identifying stereocenters. I had drawn up a complicated molecule and it had shown how many stereocenters there were in that complicated molecule. And basically what we're looking for is we're looking for centers that have four different things attached to them, A, B, C, and D. The problem is that oftentimes when we look for a stereocenter, we look for it with this description of the geometry, which is three-dimensional, and we look for the hash bonds and the wedge bonds. And the problem is that most molecules don't demonstrate the hash bonds and wedge bonds. For instance, we can take a molecule, a simple molecule, and we can put a hydroxyl group in it, and this can represent two different possible isomers. It can represent having the hydroxyl group forward and the hydrogen back, and it can represent the molecule in which the hydroxyl group is back and the hydrogen is forward. So the representation where we just use the straight line, this representation represents both molecules. So it represents the two isomers. And so we need to be able to see this as having four different things attached to it. And so we need to be able to envision the hydrogen that is also there. And what we do then is that when we take a structure like this and we're looking to see, can this possibly be a stereocenter? What we do is we look at each one of the groups. And so we might go through and label the hydroxyl group as being one. We might label the methyl group as being group number two, the ethyl group as group number three, and then finally the hydrogen is group number four. And so we have the four different groups attached to it. Oftentimes what I'll do is if I'm using, without color, if I'm using a pen, I will go through and I will box in each of the different groups. And we box in the entirety of the group. We don't stop at just a subgroup or subpart. We box in the entire thing. And so there I can take a look at these boxes now and I can go through and I can color in my boxes and say, yeah, each one of these boxes contains something different. And so this does indeed represent a stereogenic center, a center that has the possibility of having two different configurations. Okay, so that's essentially what I'm doing. And for a larger molecule, I would need to do that for a larger molecule as well. So if I extend this molecule out, and let's say that we're looking at something.
I actually have a quick question about representing the different isomers.
Please, Jonathan.
Previously, I had seen a representation of the isomers where it's like a squiggly line, and I had assumed that that was kind of representing that it's a mixture of two different isomers.
That is indeed what that means.
Okay.
Yes. And so what Jonathan's referring to, which is an excellent question, is that when we look at these stereochemical denotations, that we refer to them, this one as the hash bond, which means back in space. You guys know that. The wedge bond, which means forward. And then the one that you haven't been introduced yet to is what we call a squiggly bond. And the squiggly bond means both. It's a representation of two isomers. So it means it can be forward or backwards. And we do use that quite frequently. When we have a mixture of isomers, the wiggly bond is used to represent the mixture of isomers. So here what we would do is we would better represent this molecule as being both of these isomers with a wiggly bond to the OH. And that means that it is a mixture, 50-50 mixture of both. So it's really not fair to say that when I draw a straight line, that this represents both. It doesn't. The straight line just means that I have not considered stereochemistry in my representation. And that if I consider stereochemistry, I need to either draw it forwards or backwards or with the wiggly line, indicating that I acknowledge that this is a stereocenter and that it could be both. And that's how we use those. And we'll do more with the wiggly bond or the squiggly bond in a little bit. What I want to do is I want to take this molecule and I want to see how many stereocenters there are in the molecule. So when I take the molecule, I may have to draw it multiple times in order to consider how many stereoisomers there are. Possible places where I can look in order to see if there are stereoisomers is to look at centers where there are three different things attached, where I can see three, and the fourth one is a hydrogen that's in place. And so what I would do there is in that first position, I would draw in the hydrogen. Let's do it this way. I'll take it and I'll represent the molecule. And we will copy this. Let me paste it in twice to show you how I'm going to go through and represent it. The first place that I'm going to consider is this location. And then what I will do is I will box in these groups. And compare the groups and see that there are indeed four different groups. So I can go through and I can highlight these. Color is a good way to be able to do it, but we can do it just by sight and saying, yes, there's a different group that's in here. I think I need a bigger highlighter. This is taking too long. But that's one way to color it in and to say, yeah, this has four different groups that are attached to it. If any two of the groups are the same, then it is not a stereocenter. So all four groups have to be unique and different in order for it to be a stereocenter. So that is indeed one. And what I would do is I would take and place a star next to that stereocenter, indicating that that is one stereocenter. Now I'd like to investigate this location. And again, I go through and I box in the four groups that are attached to that location. And notice that the groups change as I'm boxing them in, as I'm investigating each one of these positions. Let's go to a bigger highlighter. And it doesn't matter, I can't be consistent with colors because the groups are actually changing. And so here I'm considering not just the oxygen, but also the ethyl group that the oxygen is appended to, the hydrogen, and then the methyl group. So that is indeed four different groups again, and that is a second stereocenter. Now I may want to consider another group and say, what about this center, maybe here, or the center here? And I could ask about those things. But those positions are sp2 hybridized. And being sp2, they only have three things attached. As such, those positions can't be chiral, or they cannot be stereogenic centers. So we would pass on those groups. Another item that frequently comes up is that if we were to change this molecule a little bit, and we were to put a double bond into the molecule, as opposed to the single bond that we had there. Now what happens is this carbon becomes sp2 and only has three groups attached to it. And so we would have this one be a stereocenter, but now this one is sp2 and it no longer is a stereocenter. So specifically, we're looking for sp3 hybridized positions in order to try to figure out if they're stereocenters. Now, it's not true that stereocenters can only be sp3. There are certain times where a stereocenter can be something different. There are what are called atrope isomers and isomers that are created by restricted rotation. These things can sometimes be chiral, but they're not things that we are generally going to track and watch for. And so there's some things there that can be chiral, but that we don't often consider, or we need to get more advanced into the topic before we can talk about those types of centers. So if I'm given a larger molecule, what about rings? How do I handle rings? If I need to handle rings, I need to be a little bit careful. Let's say that we have a cyclohexane and that this cyclohexane has a couple of different groups on it. Maybe I have an alcohol that's there and I'm just gonna put another group in here. What I've got is just a double bond that comes off the ring system. And I need to look at this ring system and consider what centers might be chiral. Well, as I go around the ring system, anything that's sp2, I'm going to ignore. Anything that has two groups that are the same, I'm going to ignore. Anything that has three different groups, I'm going to investigate as being potential centers. And so the two centers that I'm going to be interested in looking at is I'm going to look at that center and that center. How do I do it when it's a ring? Because the ring can sometimes confuse us. So what I do, let's start with the hydroxyl. The hydroxyl does have a hydrogen that's next to it. And as I want to box in the groups, I will box in the hydrogen. I will box in the hydroxyl group. And then on the ring system, what I tend to do with the ring system is I go down and I kind of split the carbon or just take the group. The only thing that's really important is that I'm tracking and that what I'm highlighting as being a group here is that I'm splitting the carbons. I don't need to take this last carbon, and I don't mean to imply that I always need to split the carbon. I'm gonna take it kind of that way. I'll leave that center carbon out. There's multiple ways to consider. All that really needs to happen is that I need to see that as I go around the left side of the ring versus the right side of the ring, that I see something different. And that is indeed the case here, that as I go around the left side versus the right side, I do see something different. And that constitutes two different groups. So again, what I'm comparing is that when I go around that ring system, I'm looking at, as I go this way versus going that way, are they different? And in this case, it's true that they are. They are different as I go around right and left-hand side. And so that would make that hydroxyl group a stereocenter. I could also consider the other position where I've got the methyl and the ethyl. There's no hydrogen to consider. And here what I would do is I would box in the methyl group, the ethyl group. Around one side of the ring system, I'm going to hit these two carbons in a row that are CH2 groups, CH2, CH2. As I go around this side of the ring system, I hit the hydroxyl group and then a CH2. And so I've already hit something that's different, and I don't need to include everything on the ring system to see that the left-hand side and the right-hand side are different. I think that's really the key to dealing with a ring system, is just seeing that as I go left-hand side versus right-hand side, or clockwise versus counterclockwise, that I am met with something different in each direction. And if you are, then that indeed is a stereogenic center. In this case, I do. I have four different things, and so this is also a stereocenter. And there are two stereocenters in that molecule. Now, what happens if the ring system happens to have two groups attached, and the ring looks maybe like this? Is this a stereocenter? And what I do is I go through, just as I've said, and highlight out and see if I can track four different groups. So as I go and I highlight out the ethyl group, the methyl group, around one side of the ring system, and this time I will split the double bond in half. And around the other side of the ring system, and I'll split that double bond in half. And what I see here is that clearly I have an ethyl and I have a methyl, but then when I go down the ring system, on this side I have a CH2, CH2 connected to the double bond, and on the other side I have a CH2, CH2 and connected to the double bond. These two are the same around the ring system. In fact, there is a plane of symmetry that cuts down the middle of the molecule that makes the left-hand side and the right-hand side the same. This is not a stereocenter. So that's how I would deal with a ring system in that way. This can be complicated. As I've said, I can give you molecules now that are fairly complicated molecules and ask you to be able to identify how many stereogenic centers there are in the molecule. So another molecule that we may be asked to consider maybe something like this steroid. And it's being given without stereochemical designations It's just being given to me with straight bonds in it. This is aromatic. And then I have an oxygen ether bond that is there. This is a drug that is called mestranol, M-E-S-T-R-A-N-O-L. It's an oral contraceptive. And if I wanted to figure out how many stereogenic centers there are in the molecule, I need to go through the molecule and I need to consider any places where there might possibly be stereogenic centers. Notice that the ring here has all sp2 hybridized carbons. So I would ignore all of those sp2 hybridized carbons. This position is a position where I have three different groups coming together. This could quite possibly be a stereogenic center. We'll need to investigate. This could be another one. Here's a possible third, a possible fourth, and a possible fifth. And if I go through and I do an analysis similar to this type of analysis where I go through and highlight all the groups, I will indeed find out that these are stereogenic centers. 1, 2, 3, 4. And 5 stereogenic centers in that molecule. And so learning to be able to see those stereogenic centers is what we need to be able to do. I'll give you one more just to see kind of the complexity. Sometimes they're not always ring systems, although they may include ring systems. These are both aromatic rings that are here. This then goes to another 5-membered ring system that comes down to a nitrogen. Nitrogen has a carbon chain that comes off it. Comes up to a hydroxyl group. That then goes to another aromatic ring system. And then finally, carboxylic acid. This ring system is aromatic. This is an antihistamine. It is called fexofenadine. And it's an antihistamine. And if we look at how many stereogenic centers there are in this molecule, you know, we might want to look over here and we see 4 different groups, but notice that the aromatic ring and the aromatic ring, these two groups are the same. So that center right there is not a stereogenic center because they have 2 groups that are the same group. So that one's out. We come down, the ring system looks to be symmetrical. There are 1, 2, 3, 4. So these are CH2 groups that are here. This is the first one that looks like it has 4 different groups on it. And indeed, that is one of the stereogenic centers. And then we come out on the molecule again through sp2s. We come through here. These are 2 methyls. And because the 2 methyls are the same group, that is not a stereogenic center. SP2, not a stereogenic center. The only other thing in this molecule that we need to ask about is what's going on here at the nitrogen, and can a nitrogen be a stereogenic center? And indeed, nitrogens can be stereogenic centers, but they would need to have 4 different things attached to them. And in this case, having 4 different things attached would need to be different going around one side of the ring versus going around the other side of the ring. And in this case, they're not. This still can produce a cis-trans sort of stereogenic isomerism. And I'll show you with the nitrogen why, that when we have nitrogen, particularly in a ring like that, this may not have been the best example to show you guys. But let's assume that the nitrogen can take this sort of
configuration. Or nitrogen could take this configuration. These would be trans, R groups trans, these would be R groups cis, and these would be different stereogenic centers where the nitrogen is actually giving me a form of a stereogenic center, even though it only has three groups on it. The lone pair acts as a fourth group and can be stereogenic in the nitrogen. There's fast interconversion with nitrogens where they can flip back and forth. But it is possible that if we make it cold enough, that if it gets cold enough, it can stop the interconversion of the nitrogen and we can freeze it. So nitrogen can be a stereogenic center. I'll say though at room temp, they do interconvert. What do I mean by interconvert? I'll show you. So for instance, if I have a nitrogen that has a lone pair and I put three different groups on it, let's say A, B, and C, at room temperature, this thing can flip and invert itself. And as it inverts itself, it becomes CAB. And these two are mirror images of each other. These are enantiomers. And they are flipped. And that happens that nitrogen actually can interconvert. It goes through an intermediate where the nitrogen becomes trigonal planar. The lone pair resides in essentially an unhybridized p orbital and then flips to go back into an sp3 configuration and the trigonal pyramidal geometry, and it can interconvert between them. So again, it's going through a transition state where the nitrogen has a p orbital and becomes trigonal planar in its geometry C, A, and B, and interconverts, and this is known as a transition state. And so at room temp, there's enough energy to allow that thing to be able to go back and forth between those geometries and actually interconvert, which is kind of cool. All right, let's move into a new topic. Let's talk about designation of configuration. In designation of configuration, what we do is we designate the two different isomers with a specific configurational name. We use R for a clockwise orientation, S for a counterclockwise orientation, and these are designated based on the Kahn-Ingold-Prelog rules. We went through these before. So we use the Kahn-Ingold-Prelog rules. to assign priorities. Remember that these rules were the highest atomic mass at first point of difference. Gets the higher priority. Lone pairs have the lowest priority. Double and triple bonds, the way that we work with those is that we create the double atoms, so double and triple bonds are treated this way. So if I have a double bond that goes to X, then that is going to equal two different X atoms, where one of them is the dummy atom. If I have a triple bond to X, then that's going to equal three bonds to three different X's, where two of these are represented as dummy atoms. In the way that I handle double and triple bonds, and the other rule was that lone pairs have the lowest priority. That helps me take care of things like nitrogens and phosphorus and other elements like that. So lone pairs have lowest priority. Now what I do is I take the molecule. Let's use a representative molecule. And actually, let me swap these. Let's do it this way. Let me put the chlorine here, the hydrogen here. And I go through and I assign each group a priority. So how to assign designation. Number one, we go through and assign priorities. So as I go through and assign priorities, I'm looking at the four different groups. And chlorine has the atomic mass of 35, or I should say it has the atomic number of 35. 35 then would be the highest atomic number. Chlorine is going to get the highest priority. This is going to be priority number one for the chlorine. Then what I've got to compare is I've got to compare hydrogen, carbon, and carbon. As I compare these carbons, I've got two that are carbon. So these two are identical, except that this carbon over here, what it's attached to is it's attached to another carbon and two hydrogens. This carbon is attached to three hydrogens. Moving forward, thinking about it in a forward direction. Right, so if I'm looking at these and I'm thinking about how do I draw this out? How do I make this as clear as I can possibly make it? There are three hydrogens that are attached at this carbon. Those are the three hydrogens that I am citing, one, two, and three. And the carbon under consideration. And then this carbon on this side has two hydrogens and the CH3 group. And so here what I'm considering is I'm considering this carbon under consideration, but I'm looking at it and saying, okay, I've got a carbon that's there and I've got two hydrogens. And so there's my two hydrogens. And there is the carbon moving forward, looking at what it's attached to, and that carbon gives it the higher priority. And so this gets number two, this gets number three, and the lowest priority, number four, goes to the hydrogen. So I'm going to reproduce this molecule to get rid of some of the complexities that I just added to it. in trying to set up my designations. This is 1, 3, 2, 4. Now what I want to do is I want to, number two, cite down the carbon four bond. Except I want SIGHT. Cite down the stereocenter to lowest priority bond. And draw a Newman projection. So that means that I'm going to cite this direction, and the bond that I'm trying to cite down is that bond right there to the lowest priority group. Stereocenter to lowest priority group. And draw the Newman projection of what you see. So we draw that as a Newman circle. Hydrogen's going to be in the back. It looks like I will always have three different groups. In the way that I have drawn it, the chlorine is up, the methyl group is to the right, the ethyl group is to the left. This is priority 1, 3, and 2. Now, once we have that drawing, the third thing that we do is we look at the priorities and we track from priority 1 to priority 2 to priority 3. And we ask the question, do the priorities go clockwise? This is going to be designated as an R, or counterclockwise. This will be designated as an S. So in the drawing that we have chlorine 1, methyl 3, ethyl 2, and the priorities are going from 1 to 2, from 2 to 3, from 3 to 1. They're traveling in a counterclockwise orientation. That is an S. So this stereocenter is said to be an S stereocenter. An S stereocenter is one in which the priorities in a Newman projection with the lowest priority back flow in a clockwise, counterclockwise orientation. So what we can say here is that S stereo designation supposed to be an italicized S, really, which is kind of hard for me to draw to indicate that this is really italicized. This S means that when viewed as a Newman, with lowest priority group back, that does not always mean hydrogen. Sometimes there is no hydrogen. And we just take and put the lowest priority group back. With the lowest priority group back, the priorities move in a counterclockwise orientation. and R means the same thing, except priorities move in a clockwise orientation. So when I look at the molecule then, as I had designated out that molecule, this was one up two chloro. Sorry, gotta get it right. Two chlorobutane. But in order to tell specifically which one it is, this one, when viewed down the bond, the chlorine, the methyl, and the ethyl, this was priority 1, 3, 2, were traveling in a clockwise orientation. This one was an S, it's counterclockwise. The S goes out here in front of the molecule and tells me the molecule name, tells me the specific orientation. If I take and look at the enantiomer of this, and I swap the things, and I put the hydrogen forward, and I put the chlorine back, then when I view it in the Newman, the chlorine is still up, but the methyl and the ethyl have switched, and now it travels in a clockwise orientation. This one is the R. This one, the name would be R2-chlorobutane. And you might be asking right now, well, where did the plus and minus go? And how does this relate to the rotation of the plane polarized light? And the answer is it doesn't relate at all. R and S, plus and minus, do not correspond at all. Plus minus denote a physical property. Of how the molecule reacts with light. R and S. Denotes the physical orientation of the stereocenter. It is nothing more than a man-made categorizing it. It's how we categorize them, is either R or S, in order to be able to draw the molecule. So it's the physical orientation of the stereocenter. And they do not relate to one another. R does not correspond to positive. R could be positive or minus. S can be positive or minus. So when we determine these, this is determined by experiment. This part is determined by man-made system. And they just don't relate to each other. When you know the positive minus and how it reacts with plane polarized light, and you know whether it is R or S, then it is said that you know the absolute configuration of the molecule.
So we have one other term here. Absolute configuration. Is when you know both the sine of rotation and configuration. Not an easy thing to do. And I'm looking to see if I have the plus or minus here, and I don't. I don't know which one is plus or which one is minus. So I'm probably going to get this wrong. I got a 50-50 shot at it. So if we were to say plus R 2 chloro butane, this would be the absolute configuration. And can only be determined by careful experiment. Essentially, what has to be done is we have to know exactly what isomer we're dealing with, whether it's the R or the S. There are certain types of chromatography that can allow us to determine whether or not we're dealing with the R or the S. If we can crystallize it, we can get it into a crystal structure and we can dope it with heavy elements. Sometimes the X-ray crystal structure can tell us whether or not we're dealing with the R or the S. Then we take that specific isomer and we go and do a rotation study. We see whether it rotates positive or negative. Then we know the absolute configuration. But it's very difficult to do. It's not an easy thing at all. All right, how do we deal with molecules that have more than one stereocenter in them? Here, what we do is the exact same thing. We just need to do it for each stereocenter. So again, let's stick with the chlorides. Let's go to a molecule that's got six. So that's 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. There's six. And let's put one chlorine forward and one chlorine backward. This is a 2,4-dichloro. Hexane. And we want to find the stereocenters. Find the configuration of each stereocenter. Same process. Just do one at a time. So we pick the stereocenter that we're going to focus on. If the chlorine is forward, that means the hydrogen must be back. The other stereocenter, we can include the chlorine, but we don't need to do any more work there. We go through and we set our priorities. Chlorine is going to be priority one. The longer carbon chain here is going to be priority two, the methyl priority three, the hydrogen priority four. I'm going to cite down that bond. Looking at the highest, it's the highest number, but the lowest priority. The highest priority is priority number one. So I cite down that bond and I look down the carbon bond and I draw what I see. That's going to put the chlorine up, the methyl on the right, and the chain that's got the rest of this stuff on it, including the chlorine, over on the right-hand side. Hydrogen is back. This is the CH3 group. This is going to be priority one, two, and three. Notice that it's traveling from one to two, from two to three, back to one. This is going in a clockwise orientation.
This is an R stereocenter. I do the same thing for the next carbon, the next stereocenter. So I'll redraw and I reprioritize. Chlorine is back. Hydrogen is forward. This one is going to be made more difficult because the hydrogen is forward. So I go through and I set my prioritizations. One for the chlorine, two for the longer carbon chain, three for the methyl, four for the hydrogen. And I want to site down this bond. That means I'm going to have to do it from the back side. And I have to envision this from the back side. This is not an easy thing to do. When I draw this Newman, I'm going to put the chlorine up and I need to think about where these substituents are. Right now, as I rotate this thing around to look at this group is going to swing around and be over here on the left-hand side. This is going to be my methyl. This is going to be the rest of the chain with the chlorine on it. And I'm not even going to try to figure out what orientation that's going to be, but it's going to be on the right-hand side. This is going to be one, two, and three. And again, I am cycling around, moving in a clockwise orientation. This is also an R. So these are two R stereocenters. And the way that I would name this molecule, as I want to go through and name it, I'll redraw the molecule again. Two, three, four, five, six. Two was forward, four was backward. This is an R stereocenter. This is an R stereocenter. I do two R, comma, four R, close parens, dash, two, comma, four, dichloro, hexane. The stereochemical designations of R require locant numbers, as do the chlorines themselves, because the stereocenter could be separate from the chlorine. And so there needs to be locator numbers for each. The stereochemical designation always goes in parentheses, followed by a dash, and then the locant numbers for the substituents, the dichloro group, and then the parent chain hexane. That's the way that we would go through and do that. All right, so how many isomers then does a given formula represent? How many different isomers can there be? So let's look at this formula. Let's go back to the same molecule that we were just doing. Knowing that I've got two stereogenic centers, how many molecules does this actually represent? So when we say how many isomers, how many molecules does this actually represent? Well, we could draw a number of different molecules. In looking at this, we could take with these two different stereocenters, I could put the two chlorines both on the same side of the molecule. I could put the two chlorines on both the back side of the molecule. I could put the first one forward and the second one backward, or I could reverse that. And I could put the first one backwards and the second one forward. These would be designated, let's see, this is going to be SS. No, it's not. It's RS. Make sure they're getting them right. This one is RS. This one is SR. This one is RR. And this one is SS. These represent the four different combinations that can be made from two given stereocenters. And they represent four different compounds. Out of those four different compounds, the relationships of these four different compounds are such that when I look at both stereoisomers, both stereocenters, stereogenic centers, flipping, going from RR or S to SR, and they have both flipped in this way, these two are enantiomers. When I look at these two down here, RR versus SS, these are enantiomers. They are mirror images of one another. However, if I look at the relationship difficulties with my tablet. Stop it. If I look at the relationship, don't know what my tablet is doing all of a sudden. Hang on a second. There we go. Now it's going to work. No, it's not. It's being finicky. If I look at how these molecules relate across one another. If I'm looking at RS versus RR, one stereocenter is the same. The other one has flipped. These are not mirror images. These are what we call diastereomers. And I have many more diastereomeric relationships. And going across this way, these are also diastereomers. And remembering that enantiomers are mirror images of one another, diastereomers are not mirror images of one another, although they're very closely related. So the number of isomers can be summarized this way. The number of isomers equals 2 to the n, where n equals the number of stereogenic centers. And this is actually a maximum number. 2 to the n gives maximum number. The actual number may be smaller. You say, why might the actual number maybe smaller? Why might it be less? Let's consider another molecule here. So let's look at a molecule. Do it here. Let's consider this molecule. It has two hydroxyl groups on it. How many isomers possible? Well, we would look at it and we would say, here's a stereogenic center, and here's a stereogenic center. So this should be 2 to the 2,
2 to the n, which equals 2 to the 2, which equals, in this case, should be 4. Should be 4 possible stereocenters. Or 4 possible isomers. But as we start to draw these out, let's draw them out and see what we get. One is where both of the hydroxyl groups are forward. One is where both of the hydroxyl groups are back. Then I could have a set where I could put one hydroxyl group forward, one hydroxyl group back, and then in the other molecule, reverse it. Put the first one back and the second one forward. Okay, now the question is, are these molecules mirror images or not? Have I done the right thing? So now we could take and let's say this one is A, B, C, D. We compare them and we make sure that they actually are mirror images to each other. So let's look at A and B. When we look at them, they do appear to be mirror images. So there's A. And if I think about this as a plane that I'm going to investigate the mirror image properties, and I'm asking, are these in fact mirror images? The only way that I could do that is I have to flip the molecule over and compare it and see what winds up happening. So if I take molecule B and on this axis I rotate it around, what I wind up doing is making it look like this. This group would come forward and this group would come forward. That's B. And then if I take B and I just rotate it slightly this way, so I take what was this axis and I rotate it through a degree, through an angle, and I redraw it, I get this. And this is still B. But now when I compare that and I take and I draw that and compare A and B, what do we see? We see that A and B are actually the same molecule. The fact that A and B are the same molecule is a function of the symmetry of the molecule that we have drawn. A and B are, in fact, one of the same. It is A and its mirror image, B, are actually the same molecule. That comes about because the molecule A and B has a plane of symmetry that runs down the molecule. And both halves of the molecule are mirror images of one another. The molecule has a plane of symmetry. where one side is the mirror image of the other. When this happens, the molecule is said to be meso. Meso is a term that we use when a molecule and its mirror image are superimposable and are one and the same. Actually, I'm going to change this definition. Let me scrap that. Let me change this. Let's say that meso is a molecule which contains stereocenters. But is not chiral. Due to a plane of symmetry which makes the molecule and its mirror image one and the same. That's really a better way to do it. Because what that means is that a mesomolecule does not rotate plane polarized light. And therefore, a mesomolecule is not chiral. Okay, so then how many isomers are there really? When we look at this molecule, there are really only three isomers. There is this one. Which has the two hydroxyl groups. This one is meso. And then there are the other two. Which are not meso. Which can have mirror images. And so there are only three isomers. Oops, I missed that. And we could go through and we could give them names, R and S, for each one of the hydroxyl groups. We could go through and do that. It's not entirely necessary for this exercise, but this one has the plane of symmetry, which is meso. And then these two are enantiomers. They are mirror images of one another. They are non-superimposable. So no matter how many times I flip or rotate, these two cannot be superimposed on each other. These are enantiomers. And then the relationship between these three with the first one is that they're diastereomers. Even though the top one is not chiral. And the bottom two are. It's a little bit of a complicated relationship, I know. And the fact that something is meso is really interesting. And trying to identify when things are meso is really a challenge because it has stereocenters, stereogenic centers. It's just that it happens to have a plane of symmetry. There are other molecules that are very similar to that. For instance, I can take a molecule and I can put groups on this molecule. Let's use those hydroxyl groups. And let's put a third hydroxyl group on this. And this molecule, again, has a plane of symmetry that runs right down the molecule. And this molecule is meso. And the plane of symmetry cuts right through atoms in the molecule. It doesn't have to cut through the molecule in the middle of the molecule. It can cut through the middle of atoms. And the molecule can still be meso, where it and its mirror image are superimposable upon each other. And so what is required to be meso? Meso molecule must have at least two chiral centers or two stereogenic centers. But can have more. Okay, so where I was going to go from here was I was going to go into a talk about optical activity and looking at how we take optical activity measurements, the design of the device, the actual calculation. We don't do the calculation a whole lot, but it's good to understand how that calculation works and to look at it and to understand what goes into taking it because it's such a core component of stereochemistry in understanding how optical activity measurements are actually taken. And then there's a whole series of terms that we need to do. Maybe what I should do really quick, since I have just a couple of minutes, rather than just cutting it, let's just show how to draw enantiomers and how to check that things are enantiomers. This is a shorter sort of discussion, and then I'll go back and I'll catch that calculation component on the next lecture after spring break. Let's just show how to draw enantiomers and isomers. Because there's a couple of different ways to do it. Number one is the mirror image way. If I take a molecule that has stereogenic centers in it, and I'm given something to start off with, and this may have a number of different stereocenters in the molecule. Make that bond angle a little bit better. Then when I draw it, what I do is I drop down a plane and I literally draw the mirror image of it. So I just do all the bonds with the same stereochemistry that I'm seeing, but I'm paying attention to draw them. I think I did that one. I wanted to go down. I should have come up with this one. This would have made this better. Let's come up and down. Now that looks better. There's that guy, and then we will do hydroxyl group there. So those are drawn as mirror images. Those are enantiomers. The other way is to reverse all the stereocenters. So here, if I start with the same molecule, and I'm asked to draw its enantiomer, then what I can do is I can draw it in the same orientation, but each stereocenter that I'm given, I flip it. OH, carbonyl, make this group go back, make the bottom isopropylene group come forward. And what that does is it makes these two molecules the same. They're just drawn differently. I just need to flip every single bond. Whatever comes forward goes back. Whatever goes back comes forward. And these two molecules should be the same. And so you can either represent it as a mirror image. Sometimes that's easier for people to draw. Sometimes it's easier to be able to take and just flip each stereocenter. And that makes them geometrically the same. So that's how we do it. If you don't flip all three, if we only flip two out of the three, or one out of the three, then we don't draw, or we are not drawing enantiomers. The relationship then between the molecules becomes diastereomers. What do I mean? I mean that if I take two molecules and now I go to draw, but I don't flip all the stereocenters. Let's say that I just flip one. In just flipping one, the relationship between the two molecules when compared are that they are diastereomers. So let's say that I've got forward, which is going to be blue. Oops, it's supposed to be blue. And I need a smaller highlighter. Okay, forward, let's make that blue. Forward, blue. Forward blue, back is going to be red. You can see that these two groups are the same. These two groups are the same. This one group is different. These are diastereomers. And that the difference is just in that position there. And so if you want to draw them as enantiomers, you need to flip all of them. If we only flip one, then we create diastereomers. Okay? I think that's enough for now. We'll catch up, we'll come back and we'll do the optical rotations. And then what else do we have? We had optical rotations and we have fissure injections and resolutions. So after spring break, we'll come back. I'm just gonna make a note for me more than anything. After spring break, we'll have optical rotations. Measurement. We'll have fissure projections. Resolutions. Resolution is how we separate enantiomers. How we actually go through and do that. And then a summary of notation. Because, and notation in terms. because there are a lot of different terms that we use, a lot of different notations. There's all kinds of stereochemical designations, D and L, plus and minus. We have R and S. We have capital D and capital L, lowercase, all of these types of things. And then all of these different terms that we use, percent, percent enantiomeric excess, diastereomers, enantiomers, all kinds of different things that we'll define and we'll go through and we'll show you what they all mean and how they all relate and put them all in one place. So we'll come back and that'll be where we'll pick it up after spring break, is in all of that area. All right. I've got a few things up in the Canvas shell to be aware of. I put up two new co-ops. Those are linked into chapter 4. So that's co-op 1 and co-op 3. Those co-ops I put due at the end of spring break. That'll give you something to play with and do. That'll give you a chance to go in and play with the WebMMO server. I'm not going to put up a new quiz. I had thought about it, but I don't want to overwhelm you with a bunch of stuff to do. And I think that's about all the update information I've got to give you. Everything went out in emails, so you should be good to go. All right. Have a great spring break. Take care, you guys. I'll see you when we get back.